This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McLean. U.S. Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett vows to be a justice fearless of criticism as the U.S. Senate charges ahead with confirmation hearings on U.S. President Donald Trump's pick just weeks before Election Day and as the country struggles to contain the coronavirus. The committee released a letter Sunday from the architect of the Capitol, saying the hearing room has been set up in consultation with the Office of Attending Physician. Some U.S. senators are staying away, attending remotely. Barrett draws on faith and family and prepared opening remarks for hearings that start Monday. She says she would bring a few new perspectives as the first mother of school-aged children on the court. Thousands of people protested Sunday in Los Angeles to condemn Azerbaijan's and Turkey's role in hostilities and against Armenia and the separatist Nagorno-Karabakh region. The protest came as Azerbaijan and Armenia accused each other of violating a Russia-brokered ceasefire deal that took effect at noon Saturday. Southern California is home to the largest Armenian population in the United States, and the recent bout of fighting between the two sides started September 27th and left hundreds of people dead in the biggest escalation of the decades-old conflict over the Nagorno-Karabakh region. The Trump administration Sunday called on Congress to pass a stripped-down coronavirus relief bill using leftover funds from an expired small business loan. The administration proposal, which Democrats dismissed as inadequate, was the latest twist in on-again, off-again talks to try to secure more stimulus as the economy struggles to recover from the coronavirus. This is VOA News. Globally, more than 1,075,000 people have died from COVID-19, with the figure creeping toward 215,000 in the United States, followed by Brazil with more than 150,000 and India at more than 108,000. Mainland China's health ministry reported 21 new COVID-19 cases for October 11th. That matches the number of new cases a day earlier. And the National Commission said in a statement all of the new cases were imported infections that originated from overseas. The United Kingdom's hospitality industry is now mounting a legal challenge to the government's lockdown restrictions, aiming to stop its plans to close pubs and other venues to tackle the rise in coronavirus cases. The Nighttime Industries Association, a UK trade body, told Reuters late Sunday that the industry has taken legal action to prevent lockdown measures from being imposed. The judicial review reported earlier by the Financial Times, who argue that no evidence supports hospitality venues having contributed to the spread of COVID-19. Singapore and Indonesia have agreed to reopen borders between the two countries for essential business and official travel after they were shut down to curb the spread of COVID-19. Indonesia has recorded over 333,000 cases. It's the second highest rate in Southeast Asia behind the Philippines, and its capital, Jakarta, has been subject to strict social curbs. Singapore, meanwhile, is seeing just a handful of cases on a daily basis. China staged a large-scale island invasion military exercise during Taiwan's National Day of, as President Tsai Ing-wen called for a meaningful dialogue with Beijing. The simulated night attack weekend drill included drones, special forces, and airborne troops moving from multiple locations. That's according to a report by the state broadcaster China Central Television. It was the first time in recent years that China's Chinese media had disclosed the entire process of a staged military landing in Taiwan. Tensions over Taiwan have risen sharply in recent weeks as Beijing has ramped up military pressure with its warplanes almost daily crossing the sensitive median line. And officials in the U.S. state of Louisiana have announced a second death from Hurricane Delta. The State Department of Health says a 70-year-old woman died in a fire likely caused by natural gas leaks following damage from the storm. Also, the governor, John Bel Edwards, said that an 86-year-old man died in a fire that started after he refueled a power generator in a shed. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, October 12, and here are some of the stories we are covering. ECOWAS concludes an assessment mission to Mali.
The president of Ghana explained that the first objective of his mission was to show solidarity to the Malian people and to express the satisfaction of ECOWAS on the way that this transition is going on.
Liberia gears up for dual protests this month in November. We'll examine the plight of human rights activists beaten and jailed last week in Guinea-Bissau. And Uganda's main opposition party chooses its standard bearer for 2021 election.
We've got to examine ourselves and see whether we are actually genuinely pulling in one direction or not. The second thing that needs to be addressed is what the interest of the coalescing parties would be.
And some Kenyan students are returning to school today, Monday, but some teachers and parents are ambivalent. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A delegation from the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, met yesterday Sunday in Bamako with Malian officials to assess that country's transitional process. The delegation was led by Ghanaian president and current chair of ECOWAS, Nana Akufo-Addo. The mission also comprised former Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan, who is also ECOWAS special envoy and mediator on the Malian crisis. Ibrahim Khan is the Senegalese human rights activist and political analyst.
I think the president of Ghana explained that the first objective of his mission was to show solidarity to the Malian people and to express the satisfaction of ECOWAS on the way that this transition is going on. Two, also to express, because ECOWAS was, as an organization, was worried about the situation of the head of the opposition. And I think it was also an opportunity to show the Malian government that they made an important effort in really trying to sort out his problem.
It seems there has been some progress in Mali with the transition process, particularly with the release of prisoners by the jihadists. But also, there may still be some things to do in order to complete the process.
Well, I think this process is now to make sure that all the institutions of the transition are in place. You know that ECOWAS is really taking the issue of the CNSP very seriously. Up to now, that CNSP was not dissolved, and which is a very important request of the ECOWAS. Because if the CNSP exists, it means that the CNSP will be in competition with other institutions of the transition. And everything was made from the beginning to make sure that the army will not run this country during the period of transition. The army will have to slowly go back to what is its own job, which is trying to make sure that there is no conflict in the central part of the country, and try to also help in sorting out the issue of the northern part of the country. I think if that is done, the role of ECOWAS would have been done.
What do you know about reports coming out of Bamako that as much as between 15 to 20 million euros must have been paid to the jihadists for the release of opposition politicians Soumaila Cisse and the French hostage Petroni? What do you know about this?
Officially, there will be no confirmation of that one, that ransom have been paid for them. But we know for sure in the past that was the case for all the liberation of people who were abducted by the different group in the northern part of Mali. But I think, above all, that's not the most important aspect at the moment. The most important aspect at the moment is that at least Soumaila Cisse is free. He's a key actor in the country because he was the head of the opposition. And by being released at this particular moment, it will really help to give the institution of the transition, particularly the parliament of the transition, an important role. Because now the parliament will be animated by people really want to make sure that the new institution that will come after all this transition will not be similar to the institution that we knew before.
Ibrahima Khan is the Senegalese human rights activist and political analyst. He was speaking with us from the Senegalese capital, Dakar. Liberia is gearing up for protests this month in November. The collaborating political parties will have the first of a series of protests on October 28. The Council of Patriots, which is also part of the collaborating opposition parties, is planning another protest on November 16. The protests come as tension is high in Liberia because of the pending December special senatorial election and the wave of recent mysterious deaths of ranking government employees working in finance. A Liberian Supreme Court justice over the weekend issued a temporary stay order on the December senatorial election processes. Representative Yeke Koluba is the chair of mobilization for the October 28 protest.
The opposition collaborating parties have decided to assemble peacefully on the 28th to create the awareness for the voter tracking, the ongoing voter registration that have been marked by a lot of issues that need to be corrected. I'm not close to the authority to speak for the opposition collaborating parties. I'm giving you my view as a chair for mobilization. So we are going to create the awareness peacefully. We are going to assemble peacefully in the various streets of Monrovia. We'll do our parade to create the awareness with our international partners. I've invested so much in this country and don't want to see the country go behind. Because you know the electoral process is very key to the democracy we have in our country right now.
Honorable Koluba, I think you are aware, on Saturday, October 10, a justice of the Liberian Supreme Court issued a stay order on all activities pertaining to the December elections. Do you think it might impact your planned protest?
In my own view, while we wait for the result from the Supreme Court, we are still planning our process because I'm the chair for mobilization. We'll be carrying on our awareness start tomorrow. We'll be going to rural communities. We'll be going to counties to carry on the awareness for the 28th peaceful assembly because look, we are not going to take this election for joke. The ruling party won the election by all costs, so they can do anything to take this election. So we'll create the awareness for the international community to come in to tell them that this government is up for something. They don't want to have a peaceful election. They want to have chaos in their country, and we need an intervention.
Recently, but especially in the last 2 weeks or so, there have been deaths of some high-ranking financial professionals employed by the Liberian government. What do you, the opposition, know about what's going on?
That is also within our peaceful assembly. You may be aware I've also been appointed as a vice chair for mobilization for the COP. We have a pending protest on November 16. So all those camps will be in the CPP, peaceful assembly, and the COP pending peaceful protests. We will assemble peacefully and also have our protest peacefully. The Constitution provides for that. So in our camp, we have 10 camps. We'll also be talking about the $25 million mop-up exercise, the voter roll, the violence perpetrated by seditions against peaceful citizens. We'll also be talking about the rape issue. You know, our mothers have come on so many occasions to carry on peaceful protests on the rape issue. We'll also be talking about the passport saga. Liberia is not respected anymore when it comes to our passport. Anywhere you take our passport, all the country is not respected anymore. So we want the dignity to come back to our country. So we want the international community to come in.
I did speak with the justice minister by WhatsApp, and I asked him what was going on. He says that the government is investigating, and wherever the investigation lies, if there needs to be a prosecution, there will be prosecution.
Look, you can't take the government serious. The government have done a lot of investigation and nothing have come out of it. So we need an independent body to do this investigation on people that important people have been killed in this country.
Representative Yeke Koluba is chair of mobilization for the October 28th opposition protest in Liberia. He was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. Two human rights activists were detained and some sources say beaten in Guinea-Bissau last week before being released. Carlos De Silva, a spokesperson for the Conscious and Uniformity Citizens Movement in Guinea-Bissau, tells Ricky Stryer that these detentions of government critics are part of a growing trend in the country.
According to the speculation, these two people that have been arrested recently is because they create a false profile in the Facebook where they write and they insult the president, Susy Barbosa, that is Minister of Foreign Affairs. This is according to speculation. Nobody knows what is true or not, but this is what's going on, people are saying, you know. Also, to the, according to the speculation, the first deputy that was arrested, it was because he criticized the action of the president. That's why he was arrested.
As I understand it, other human rights activists or political activists have been arrested for 24 or 48 hours, a couple days at a time in the recent months. Can you tell me about some other cases similar to this?
We have serious issues on the human rights and the freedom of speech and the freedom of press in our country recently. And we have cases like this happening recently in the country. First, it was one of the deputy of APU who criticized publicly the government, and it's been captured, put in jail, later on released because of the pressure of the population. And later on, it's happened, one of the leaders of the PIGC being captured and put in prison for 2 or 3 days, then released. And also it happened with these two young people, political activists for Madden, support the Madden chickens, being put also in a prison, just being released. And none of these cases, are object of any justification from the government. Government doesn't explain why those people has been put into prison, you know, and the population is still worrying why people are living in this kind of freedom, you know. This is what's going on in the country right now.
What has been the reaction from the police as far as these accusations? Have they responded to the accusations by the Human Rights League? And what are they saying?
So far, no reaction from the police, no reaction from the governments. So everyone is waiting for the public response from the government or police, you know. Nobody know really what happened to those two political activists, proponent of or support of Madden. So we are waiting for the moment.
That was Carlos De Silva, a spokesperson for the Conscious and Uniformity Citizens Movement in Guinea-Bissau. He was speaking to Ricky Stryer from the capital, Bissau. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, October 12. The leader of Uganda's biggest opposition party says he has what it takes to defeat incumbent President Yoweri Museveni in the coming 2021 election. Patrick Oboy Amurayat, president of the Forum for Democratic Change, FDC, says he has enough experience and support to win the 2021 elections. But one analyst warns that a lack of unity in the opposition might earn President Museveni yet another election victory. Mugumi Davis Rakarinji reports from Kampala.
Patrick Oboy Amariat was last week selected as the FDC flag bearer for the presidency in the forthcoming elections after his opponent stepped down. Amariat says his opponent stepped down in order to avoid further splits within the party. Some prominent members of FDC, including founding member and former army chief General Mugisha Muntu, left the party when Amariat was elected party president some 4 years ago. He says he will work with former party leader and four times presidential candidate, retired Colonel Chiza Besigye, to mobilize masses to vote the ruling party, National Resistance Movement, out of power.
I have been a very close comrade of Dr. Chiza Besigye. We have worked for many, many, many years together. Our style of politics is the same. He's taught me a lot of things. And one thing that everybody needs to be sure about, he is still around. And, you know, going into the next election is going to play a unique role of commanding what we refer to as Plan B, that is mobilizing the population to stand up against the dictatorship.
Amariat says his party has built village teams that will help canvass for votes for those contesting for both local and national political offices. He says his party is in talks with other opposition groups to discuss a possibility of fronting a joint candidate for the presidency. But Amriat says a coalition must be built on transparency and trust from members of the opposition.
We've got to examine ourselves and see whether we are actually genuinely pulling in one direction or not. The second thing that needs to be addressed is what the interest of the coalescing parties would be. And this too has to be critically examined, because in strategic terms, some of the political parties in the opposition think that election in itself and by itself can bring change to this country. We do not believe that, and that could be a point of departure.
Political and security analyst Alhaji Yasin Sekamate says the possibility of fielding a joint candidate by the opposition is simply out of question.
I strongly believe that the Ugandan opposition cannot unite. If, for example, the Ugandan opposition was fighting for the common value, those people that are establishing parties now should have joined the existing parties and form a strong force that would run against Mr. Museveni. You find opposition fighting opposition. You find opposition opposing opposition. And with this kind of environment, I think the opposition is not ready at the moment to take over power.
Over the years, opposition political parties in Uganda have forged loose coalitions only for them to collapse at the last minute. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinje, Kampala, Uganda.
Kenya, like other African countries, is trying out the phased reopening of schools. Primary and secondary school students are expected to report to school today, Monday, after 7 months of coronavirus closure. As Atieno Odhiambo reports from Nairobi, some schools and parents are ambivalent about reopening.
Cabinet Secretary for Education, Professor George Magoha, said last week that the government was testing the waters with the return of these three grades, and if successful, the remaining grades will be allowed back in school.
We have opened schools in the very strict hope that we will succeed and that we shall recoup the year which otherwise would have been lost. I've also said that we are going to observe these three classes, and if there is no big issue, then after thorough stakeholder consultation and government consultation, we shall reopen the rest of the schools.
However, Peter Ndoro, Chief Executive Officer of the Kenya Private Schools Association, says 196 private schools have since closed, affecting 54,000 learners and 1,300 teaching and non-teaching staff. He says some private schools have closed because they could not afford the rent. Other schools have been inundated by floods that have recently engulfed parts of the country. Other schools' owners converted their schools to more profitable businesses. Joseph Maina, the director of Moya Brethren Primary School, says he converted his classrooms into a chicken farm.
After the COVID-19 broke in March, I found myself in a dilemma. So I decided to start some business which would take care of my family. That is how I ended up starting preparing. I was not prepared about the opening of the school by now. I had set myself by January where I could have even disposed some of the chicks. But somehow I have tried to reorganize once again, put some chicks on one side, and the other side I put some classes. But if it so happens that the whole school is going to open, let me be very sincere, I will not open.
Some parents have also expressed the opposition to the decision to reopen schools, citing that they are not prepared and that the 1 week notice was too short. They also say they do not have money for school fees as their income has been greatly affected by the pandemic. Emmanuel Odhiambo has two children in grade 4 and 8.
To the Ministry of Education, this is something that is actually sort of a mixed feeling for myself, because on the one hand, I want my kids to be back in school, but there's also the reality that the fees to be paid, and we'd actually been psychologically prepared for January next year, because all along we had actually said as much. And so this, you know, very short notice actually, you know, came as a shocker to us, because we have to look for fees in a few days' time and have kids back school, and that's really going to be tough. I'm, you know, speaking from my own, you know, perspective, because I know the challenge that I'm facing.
As the students return to class, the ministry has instructed all schools to ensure mandatory use of face masks, monitoring of body temperature for all learners, staff, and all other persons accessing the schools, hand washing, and observance of high levels of hygiene. The education ministry has acknowledged that physical distancing will remain a challenge. However, it said this should not be enough reason to keep students away from school. Atieno Odhiambo, VOA Daybreak Africa, in Nairobi, Kenya.
Here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with a look at some of the international friendlies slated for Monday and Tuesday this week. Madagascar will face Burkina Faso, while Togo will face Sudan. Ghana will face off against Asian champions Qatar at the Maradan Sports Complex in Aksu, Turkey. The Ghanaians endured a tough 3-0 defeat against Mali in their previous match, so they will be desperate to make amends on this occasion. On Tuesday, it will be Gambia versus Guinea. Mali will square up against Iran, while Japan will host visiting Cote d'Ivoire. Cameroon will square it out with South Sudan, while Nigeria will face Tunisia in Austria. Morocco will trade tackles with Congo DR, while Senegal is up against Mauritania. Mexico will welcome Algeria to the Coursera Stadium in The Hague, Netherlands. The Algerians defeated Nigeria 1-0 on Friday. On Sunday, 2 goals in 3 minutes by Zambia's Kelvin Kapamba and Chaniza Zulu stunned Bafana Bafana 2-1 in favor of the Zambians in a friendly international match at the Royal Bafokeng Stadium in Rustenburg on Sunday. Elsewhere at the Benjamin Mkapa Stadium, Dar es Salaam, Saidu Interbazuni's Giza strike late in the second half was enough to hand Burundi a 1-0 win against Tanzania on Sunday. Egyptian Football Association Executive Director Walid Al-Attar has announced that the new season of the Egyptian Premier League will start by the end of November, confirming that the remaining games of the Egyptian Cup will be played soon. Former Etihad of Alexandria and the Algerian national team manager Jean-Michel Cavalli has been announced as Niger's new manager. Cavalli spent most of his managerial career between France and North Africa, where he coached in Algeria, Egypt, Morocco, and Sudan. The 63-year-old will replace fellow Frenchman Jean-Guy Wallum, who was relieved of his duties last September by the Nigerian FA. And in Ghana, former president of the Ghana Football Association, Kwesi Natai, has had his lifetime ban reduced to 15 years. Niatachi was banned for life from football in October 2018 and fined for breaches of FIFA's ethics code. He was found guilty of breaking FIFA rules relating to conflicts of interest, bribery and corruption, and commission after an investigation by the Ethics Committee of World Football's governing body. And finally, in basketball news, the Federation of International Basketball Association African Board has approved 2 cities to host games in a protected environment tournament format. Kigali, Rwanda is set to host 3 groups, A, B, and D, featuring 12 teams, while the Egyptian city of Alexandria will accommodate the Group E tournament. According to FIBA Africa, the exact schedule of November games and the February 2021 window hosts will be confirmed at a later date. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, October 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a great week.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, Afrobeat to ndumbulu and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.